की जय। नामाचार्य शिरोमणि दास ठाकुर की जय। शिवो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासादि श्री गौर भक्तवृंद की जय। सामवेद भक्तवृंद की जय। गौर प्रेमानंद की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड गॉड कृष्ण। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड कृष्ण। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द लोटस फीट ऑफ गुरु नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Chapter 14, which is called the Three Modes of Material Nature, and this is text number 20. This is from Bhagavad Gita Guru. Happy birthday. A good birthday verse, though. This is about what it really means to be born. So the Sanskrit goes like this: Gunam etan atiyatrin dehi deha samudbhavan janma mrityu jara dukhaya vimukta amritam ashnute. Why don't you say that after me? Gunam qualities. Ekam,
all these.
Atitya,
transcending.
Three.
Dehi,
the embodied.
Deha,
the body.
Samudbhavan,
produced of.
Janma,
of birth.
Mrityu, death.
Jara,
and old age.
Dukai,
the distresses.
Vimuktaha,
being freed from.
Amritam,
nectar.
Ashute,
he enjoys.
Translation: when the embodied being is able to transcend these three modes associated with the material body, he can become free from birth, death, old age, and their distresses, and can enjoy nectar even in this life. What you say after me? When the embodied being is able to transcend these three modes associated with the material body, he can become free from birth, death, and old age and their distresses. And can enjoy nectar even in this life. Srila Prabhupada's purport: how one can stay in the transcendental position, even in this body, in full Krishna consciousness, is explained in this verse. The Sanskrit word dehi means embodied. Although one is within this material body, by his advancement in spiritual knowledge, he can be free from the influence of the modes of nature. He can enjoy the happiness of spiritual life, even in this body, because after leaving this body,
He is certainly going to the spiritual side. But even in this body, he can enjoy spiritual happiness. In other words, devotional service in Krishna consciousness is the sign of liberation from material entanglement, and this will be explained in the 18th chapter. When one is freed from the influence of the modes of material nature, he enters into devotional service. Ma Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namini Namaste Sarasate Deve Gaura Vani Pacharini Nivishesha Sunni Vari Paschachade Satane Om Angyaram Timarandasya Ganjana Shalakaya Chaksur Uviharitam Jainam Tasmai Sri Guru Namaha Vanshikalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhivaja Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. So this is an interesting chapter, first of all, the three modes of material nature. Because Prabhupada remarks in the beginning of the chapter, it's a very short chapter also, but Prabhupada remarks in the beginning of this chapter, he says this interesting thing. If one understands this chapter through the process of philosophical speculation, he will come to an understanding of devotional service. Because this is a very philosophical chapter and a very scientific chapter. Because in this, Krishna teaches us how to recognize the modes of material nature and how to see how they work. And then we can begin to understand how we are acting under the control of the modes of the material nature. And this is what it means to be in bondage, is really to be under the control of the modes of material nature. When we say a conditioned soul, it means conditioned by the three modes. And according to those modes and how they act on him, one is forced to act. And the whole, the body itself is born out of these three modes. In fact, the whole material world is operating in this way. So there's a description in this chapter letting us know how, what the mode of goodness is like, and what the mode of passion is like, or what the mode of ignorance is like. Of course, these modes are easy to see for anybody, because we say, we normally see that in this world things are created, coming into being, things are maintained and things are destroyed. There's a cycle like that. Just like now, it's springtime. That means mode of passion. The birds and bees go to it, thoughts of young men turn to love and so on, because spring is the time of the mode of passion. Things are growing, developing, birds and the bees and the trees are all mating. This is the mode of passion. Well, things come into being. Things are maintained for a while. And when things are being maintained, that's called nature's acting in the mode of the sattva, goodness. And then we see that after a course of time, things fall apart. They decay. They rot. They deteriorate. Decline. When this is happening, material nature is acting in the modes of ignorance, tamoguna, or darkness. So everyone can see this. Now, what we also discover that Krishna points out, is that a human being is also conditioned by these modes. And there's different mentalities or states of consciousness or orientation toward the world, which is also typical of the mode of goodness, the mode of passion, and the mode of ignorance. Prabhupada describing, somewhere in this chapter in describing them, Prabhupada said there's three types of people. This is an oversimplification, but you get the idea. Huh? One is happy, one is active, and one is helpless. So just think of, you know, the three dwarfs or something, you know, happy, active, and helpless. And there they are. Those three types of the mode of goodness. This is such an important chapter because we learn so many things. For example, that happiness comes from the mode of goodness, and knowledge develops from the mode of goodness. Whereas the result of the mode of passion is misery. And Prabhupada explains that our standard of advancement today is the standard of the mode of passion. When we think we are improving or advancing, we mean economically. And economically means we have increased facility for sense gratification. That's the mode of passion. People take this very seriously with their condition by the mode of passion. So much so that when politicians talk about the American dream, tears come to their eyes. The American dream means that you can make money, that you have the chance to make money. That's what it is. That somehow I will be richer than my parents, and my children will be richer than me. That's the American dream. It's just about money. It really is. I try to make it. You know, it's a well-known fact that when the Declaration of Independence was written, Thomas Jefferson wrote the first draft, and he said that expressed the conviction that all men are created equal. Endowed, this is the words of the Declaration of Independence, all men are created equal, endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, such as life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's what it says, right? In the first draft, written by Thomas Jefferson, it said life, liberty, and the pursuit of property. And Benjamin Franklin edited it. He made it that sound so. But that's what they mean by happiness. If you ever wondered. So this is our standard of advancement. Is the standard of the mode of passion. But the result of the mode of passion is misery. Why is that? Well, because desires increase more and more. And you're never satisfied. Even if you get what you want, you discover that's not what you're after. Because you're under the mode of passion. There's no satisfaction. There's just more desires. So you do not see that somebody has got made $5 million, that he says, okay, I have enough money now. No, now they want 10. And if they have 10, they want 20. And if they want, and so on. This is the mode of passion. And so you end up being completely unsatisfied. And since everything, all your happiness depends upon the arrangements of material nature, when these things happen that are mentioned here, old age and death and so on, you can't deal with it at all. Everything turns into misery. So this is, so if our whole civilization is advancing in terms of the mode of passion, what is our future? That's just one example of the interesting things that we can find out from this chapter. And that the standard, the actual standard, if you really want the pursuit of happiness for people, real happiness, then the standard of advancement should be the standard of the mode of goodness, where people are taught to control their mind, to control their senses, to become detached, to become peaceful, to become content with whatever they happen to have. People are not taught this at all. It would destroy the economy. You would not be good consumers. You would not want to upgrade your mobile phone or and so on. So people are not taught at all. And then the result is in the mode of passion. If what is it, the human race as a whole is in the mode of passion. But just as the demigods are in the mode of goodness and then the animals are in the mode of ignorance, but then of course there are subdivisions. Each mode is subdivided into those in the there are demigods who are demigods in the mode of goodness. They're all in the mode of goodness, but they're especially in the mode of goodness. Then there are demigods who are more passionate, and then there are demigods who tend toward ignorance, even though they're basic. So the humans, goodness, passion, and ignorance. Animals also, goodness, passion, and ignorance, even though they're whole categories in the mode of ignorance. So we are human races in the mode of passion for the most part. But from the mode of passion, either you can become elevated to goodness or you can become degraded to ignorance. And when the misery and the frustration comes as a result of the mode of passion, most people then take refuge of despair, fall into despair, nihilism, frustration, intoxication, and so then their mode of ignorance increases, mental illness, and so on. This is what happens. So what we can find in this, from studying this chapter, is we can, by studying it very carefully, and understanding that this is how material nature is working. We have this mistaken idea that this is here. This is me, and out here is nature. But not only are our bodies part of the system of material nature, but our minds are part of the system of material nature. Our minds are really part of the whole causal mechanism, the network of actions and reactions that's going on in the world outside of us. We think that here I am and here's my environment. No, our environment is our own mind. And our own mind will be in either goodness, passion, or ignorance. And as it is in goodness, it will dictate to us certain kinds of activities and ways of thinking and feeling and willing. And the mode of passion, it will dictate us to us. And the mode of ignorance, it will dictate to us. And we will be controlled in this way by material nature. We have this mistaken idea that if I can do whatever I feel like doing, then I'm free. That's how we define, most people think of freedom now. I can do whatever I want. And what that means, that I will do whatever my mind is dictating to me to do according to the modes of material nature. I think I'm free because there's no external coercion, or there's no external control. There's no boss telling me what to do, no authority telling me what to do. I just do whatever I feel like. But what I feel like turns out to be dictated by the modes of nature. And if the mode of passion is driving me to have sex, I have to do it. If the mode of ignorance is pushing me to take a drink of alcohol, I have to do it. I can't just say, no, I'd rather not. No, I'm being compelled. And I do these things in the name of freedom. I can be free to do whatever I feel like. So we are acting under bondage of these three modes of material nature. If we study this chapter, we can get very specific insight into how these are working. We just have to study it and learn to recognize, here's the mode of goodness, here's the mode of passion, here's the mode of ignorance. We have all three. We may be predominantly situated in one or the other, but whatever mode is predominant, the others will also be there, and they vie with each other. And this is described in this chapter for supremacy, and so sometimes there may be more in one, more in the other. And if we learn to just look at our own mind working in terms of these modes of material nature, once we are shown what they are, we'll recognize them and we'll see how they're working. And we'll also see how we are controlled or conditioned by these modes of nature. And the impetus for our activity in this way comes from the body and the mind and the senses. This is what it means to be conditioned. But there's another position, the transcendental position. There, the impetus for activities does not come from the modes of material nature. We are still going to be active, but we are no longer doing the activities based on the body and the modes of nature. Because the soul itself has an active nature, and that activity of the soul is the activity of devotional service. And one performs devotional service to Krishna. We are not acting under the modes of material nature. It is true that we are being controlled by Krishna, but not via the material nature or the external potency. When we are acting in devotional service, we are actually controlled by the internal potency. What that feels like, how it is different, well, you can find out by experience. In the beginning, we become under the control of the internal potency when I become the servant of a servant of Krishna. And I say to that person, what do you want me to do? And I do it. We to become devotees, we become servants. We have a master called the spiritual master. When the spiritual master is the master, then the modes of material nature are no longer the master. I also am being told what to do. But now I am under the control of Krishna's internal potency. And the modes of material nature, although they may be banging at the door, they may be badgering me, I'm not controlled by them. And as I act under the control of the internal potency, then gradually I become purified. And then, when I'm free from the modes of material nature, I simply act spontaneously, and everything I do is spiritually correct. And at that time, when we are acting in this way, here he says in this verse that one becomes free from birth, death, old age, and their distresses. There's this list here. Janma, mrityu, jara, dukkha. The miseries that arise on birth, old age, disease, death, that list. Those miseries are no longer there. And one enjoys, one experiences, is liberated from those miseries and enjoys amrita. The word mrityu is being used in this verse, meaning death. That's the root of amrita. Mrityu is death, and amrita means not death. Which Prabhupada translates here as nectar, because it's also the drink that confers that deathlessness. In that sense, it's a beverage of the demigods, which keeps them, aids their longevity. But here it actually means freedom, the happiness of transcendence. So this takes place. Here this chapter having described this the modes of material nature and then in this way talking about how to become free from them, Krishna says mamsayo avyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate sagunam samiti chaitan brahma bhuyaya kalpate. This means one who serves the Lord in devotional service, but steadily, avyabhicharena, all constantly, who has come to that point of serving the Lord constantly or steadily, sagunam samiti chaitan, he transcends the gunas. And brahma bhuyaya kalpate, he attains that platform, or that mode of being, which is called Brahman, simply by performing devotional service. Now in the purport, Prabhupada refers to the 18th chapter, where we have another verse, which is in some ways similar to this, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nasochati Nikanchati Samasareshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktir Mlavate Kuram. Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma. One who attains this platform of Brahman, in which he is Prasanatma, fully satisfied, who does not hanker for anything or lament about anything, who sees all living beings in the same. He attains my devotional service. Mad bhaktim labhate param. So this verse in this chapter says by performing devotional service, one comes to the platform of Brahman. And that verse says, when you come to the platform of Brahman, then you can perform devotional service. So what this indicates, two kinds of devotional service. One is devotional service in practice, sadhana bhakti, especially vaidhi sadhana bhakti, where we follow the rules and regulations of devotional service. Now to the people who think that they are free, but are under the controls of the modes of material nature, I can do anything I want. Anytime I want, I can just light up a cigarette. But you poor devotees, you're not allowed to do that. So you look like you can't do this, you can't do that. Someone once told me, one day, I was telling them the four regular principles, they said, what do you do? As though there's nothing else. And they feel sorry for us because somehow or other, out of some perversity, we've given up all happiness in life. So they think they're free, and to them, we look like we're in bondage, because somehow we've accepted this oppressive authority, and which doesn't allow us to do all the fun things. But the reality is just the opposite. Prabhupada translates in one place in Bhagavad Gita, he describes these things as the regulative principles of freedom. And you think, oh, is that a contradiction or what? What does it mean, the regulative principles of freedom? Freedom means no rules. There's a poem by the British poet Rudyard Kipling, the 19th century poet who was a story writer, novelist, who was a kind of, spent a lot of time, most of his life in India. And he wrote stories, The Jungle Book, all comes from Kipling stories. So he has, one of his poems is a poem about a British soldier. And it begins like this: take me somewhere east of Suez, where the best is like the worst, and there are no Ten Commandments, and a man can raise a thirst. So that's people's idea of freedom. this poem of Kipling was turned into a popular song. And they had to change it a little bit for the American public or the British public. So instead of saying where there are no Ten Commandments, it says where there are no regulations. but this is what people think. Huh? No regulations. This is freedom. So regulative principles of freedom. What is this? But it is. This is Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. In the beginning, we may feel the pinch of this constraint because the modes will be pushing us to do one thing. And we will be saying, no, I will not be dictated to by you. I'm going to follow the orders of my spiritual master. I'm going to follow the orders of Krishna and Bhagavad Gita. And by following those orders, my activities will be transcendental. But actually, one can immediately come to the transcendental platform simply by following these orders steadily. Then, in the course of time, as that develops, that's why by performing devotional service like this, one transcends the modes. One begins to act on the spiritual platform. And since this spiritual platform is our real platform, then we find out who we really are. It is not that people sometimes speak of this process as self-transformation, but that's not really correct. Because we don't transform the self, we find out who we are. We abandon our wrong idea of ourselves and come into our true identity. Because our real identity is we are servants of Krishna. That's our natural activities of devotional service. But because sometime in the past we made a horrible mistake, we turned away from Krishna and tried to be our own little God projects in this material world. Then we have become under the control of the modes of material nature. Now we are rectifying that mistake. And so again we say, Krishna, I want to be your servant. I will be controlled by you. So then there's this awkward intermediary stage where we want to be controlled by Krishna, but sometimes the modes of material nature are still pushing at us. Once in a while we succumb. But if we just keep on going and we remain steady in our determination, even if there's some failure or some slip, we're not discouraged, we get up and keep on going, then gradually, by that process, we find out we start to experience at first a very strange kind of happiness. It's a happiness that's just there. I'm not happy because of this or that or the other thing. I'm just happy. It's just there. It wasn't because I got an ice cream cone. Won the lottery. It's just there. And that's because what's there is Krishna. And the relationship with Krishna is not some theory, but it is a reality. And when I start to understand who Krishna is, then at the same time I start to understand, oh, this is who I am. And then this devotional service becomes natural and spontaneous. Then the modes of material nature, they don't no longer have any control of me whatsoever. I'm just not interested at all in these things. Anything more now, if you would. When we would, in the early days of the movement, on Thanksgiving, we would tell the reporters that we were not eating turkey. And this was like such a shock to these people that we weren't eating turkey. And actually, we had some devotees who lived outside the city, and they had a turkey, a live turkey, in their yard all the time. And so they would bring the turkey on Thanksgiving. So then the reporters would come and they'd see this live turkey. We'd see we're not eating. And so they would be on the evening news, you know. But they would say to us, don't you miss turkey? And nobody even thought, yeah, you know, do you think turkey? Yeah. Nobody wanted to have that anymore. You know, we had much nicer things. Just immediately, as soon as they said, don't you want to have turkey, you know, a drumstick or something, it's like, so that happens early on. You see, but then gradually the whole material world becomes just a big turkey. The whole thing is, yeah, who wants it? So that's the other person. One comes to the Brahma platform and then really engage in devotional service. Now it's with real happiness and real joy. And nobody has to say, don't do this or don't do that. Automatically, everything is correct. So what Krishna is telling us is to guide our experience. This Krishna consciousness, it's not just theory, it's practice, it's applied knowledge. That we understand what the modes of material nature are, we see how they're working. Once we start to see, it's called Shastra Chakshusha, once we start to see through Shastra, I mean, all around these modes of material nature have been working, but we just never recognize them. But once it's been pointed out to us, this is the mode of goodness, this is the mode of passion, this is the mode of ignorance, suddenly, the whole world lights up and we can see them working. And then if we understand those things, then we can gradually eliminate the modes of ignorance and the modes of passion. We become more in the mode of goodness. As we become more in the mode of goodness, more and more we can understand the idea of what it means, I'm not my body. As long as we're controlled mostly by passion and ignorance, even that entry-level understanding of transcendence, that I'm spirit, soul, I'm not the body, we can't even relate to it. One guy said to me once, you're trying to tell me I'm not me. What kind of philosophy is that? So people are very much identified with their material bodies. They can't imagine anything else. But when the mode of ignorance becomes more prominent, then these things become, we can have realized knowledge of this. And then we simply, by practicing devotional service, we can see. We can see lust, greed, and anger, they disappear. And then we start to become happy. And we don't know why we're happy in some ways. This seems to be a sort of natural happiness. Maybe the last time we experienced any kind of happiness like that was with little children. You just wake up and feel good. You don't know why. we can have these experiences in Krishna consciousness, and this 14th chapter is a very good guide, very analytical and scientific guide to take us through them. Okay, any questions or comments? Yes.
I heard another class a long time ago, and they said that. I asked a question about it because they were associating activity with the mode, with intelligence. So I was kind of surprised because I always thought that intelligence meant more like the mode of goodness. But you have to have intelligence to engage in so many, you know, projects. And so I'm kind of confused on that.
I don't know what point they're making exactly, but we can say that, you know, there's the mind, manas, and then buddhi, intelligence, and then ahankara, one of the subtle elements.
Like sometimes Prabhupada said that if you have some money in your pocket, then you know you have intelligence. You know what I mean? Like he made it, and obviously you have to do something to make money, so you have to have some intelligence.
Yeah, to do anything, you have to have some intelligence. But intelligence is what allows us to engage in any kind of long-term, goal-directed activity. You notice, like a little child, the intelligence is not yet developed. Just to go across the room and do something, they have a very hard time. They get distracted by this or that and this and the other thing. And if you're the parent, you have to keep reminding them what they're, because they have no intelligence. It's not developed yet. Or have you ever been around when somebody started smoking marijuana, you can just watch the intelligence disappear and then become incapable of any kind of goal-directed activity. So even to walk across the room, there has to be some intelligence. So in that sense, intelligence is always working in this way. But intelligence also has some higher functions. Intelligence is really the kind of, what you call it, the backup for the knowledge-acquiring senses. For our knowledge-acquiring senses to work, they have to be able to recognize things, to understand what they see. If it weren't for intelligence, we wouldn't see a room with people in it. We'd just see splotches of colors and things like that.
I mean, Prabhupada wanted us to be active.
Yeah, well, that's right. But activity is spiritual. The soul itself is active. So that doesn't... people who think that
not necessarily the mode of passion.
No. It depends on where it comes from. Certainly, a person the mode of passion is very active, in the sense that they're active to do so many things to realize the fruits of their work. Because mode of passion, so it's characteristically active because people want to enjoy the fruits of their work. Whereas a person in the mode of goodness may look a little inactive because they're pretty content. And a person in the mode of ignorance is inactive because they don't care. they're so apathetic and so inert that they can't do anything. So in the three modes of material nature, it looks like activity is a characteristic of the mode of passion. But even if you're reading a book, that's a kind of an activity. Even if your activity is mental, that's activity. Even a person in the mode of ignorance, they're breathing. They get up and eat, and they flush the toilet every so often, you know. there has to be some activity. And the reason that there's any activity at all in the material world is because of the spiritual touch. Because matter just by itself is like dead, it's inert, it doesn't do anything. But when the spirit soul comes into contact with matter, then it becomes active. So any activity in the world is due to the spiritual touch. His body is moving and acting because it's being animated by the spirit soul. The spiritual soul leaves, then everything stops.
So this devotional service, you know, we're supposed to be active. So this devotional service, it's a completely different thing. It kind of intrigues me because, you know, Prabhupada wants to be active. So.
Yeah, he wants us to be active according to what you need to do. But active, again, if there's activity, there's a desire. But the desire is to satisfy Krishna's senses. So that is very different when the activity is to satisfy my senses. Then that's a material activity. When the activity is to satisfy Krishna's senses, with the idea that I'm not the enjoyer of the results, and really, all I need to do is do everything I can to satisfy Krishna, and what the result is not my business, then I'm on the spiritual platform. So we have to be active in this way to satisfy Krishna's senses. And that active is not in the mode of passion, not in the mode of goodness, and not in the mode of ignorance. It's transcendental. Because the soul has its own activities. In the spiritual world, the devotees are active in a loving relationship with Krishna. There's no modes of material nature there. But they're doing so many things. See, the trouble is that the human race being mostly situated in the mode of passion, and people discover that passion leads to misery, and that the desire for enjoying this world is the cause of all our suffering, and that all action leads to misery, they say, okay, bliss must happen when there's no action. And so they think that spiritual life must be inert, because their only experience with activity is material activity. So they think spiritual life must be inactive. If you say there's spiritual activity, the first thing they'll think, that's some kind of contradiction, because they just can't imagine what it would be like to be active and at the same time not at all attached to the results. But this is actually Krishna consciousness. If I have no desires, why would I act? Well, if you don't understand about Krishna, yeah, you would wonder what to do. But I do have a desire. My desire is to see that Krishna is happy. Is to see that Krishna is satisfied. And I don't really, the only way I have of experiencing happiness is when I see that Krishna is happy in all respects. Then that's the spiritual platform. Okay? Yeah?
I'm sorry about the microphone. Is this related in the verse, which says one who is intelligent can see action and inaction, and so we're actually engaging in activities, but we're not producing any reactions.
That's right. Yeah. It looks like a contradiction. One who sees inaction and action, that is when you're performing devotional service, it produces no karma. If the demigods had a little machine, and maybe they do, they probably don't need a machine, but say there was a machine that you saw a bunch of people doing things, and it registered their karma. It was like a karma meter for every jiva. If you come and you see a whole bunch of devotees doing devotional service, there's no reading. It's just like there's nobody there. So you have to be able to and to see action and inaction. If I stop doing things because I'm afraid of bondage, then that's a kind of fruit of activity. And my inaction is actually a kind of motivated inaction. Therefore, it counts as karma. That's what it means.
Yeah. I wanted to ask about engaging in devotional service, because we saw and have seen that so many devotees have performed so many activities in Krishna consciousness. And Krishna is saying that those who have tasted of devotional service, they're free from the bonds of birth, death, old age, and disease, and they never again go back into the material world. But it seems like one could question whether these souls have ever engaged in devotional service, if devotional service in fact produces such a result. How do we look at our past activities when we, as having been devotional service, if we're still in fact affected by the modes of material energy? Are we engaging in pure devotional service, or is the tinge service that we're engaging in considered devotional service?
No. There's different ways that pure devotional service can be considered. Sometimes, if one is on the path of pure devotional service, then he's practicing pure devotional service even though he's not yet pure. So that, for example, in Krishna consciousness, if our goal is to serve Krishna favorably, as Krishna wants, and we don't have any desire for either material rewards or spiritual rewards or yogic rewards, none of those things. We want to serve Krishna as favorably as Krishna wants, without any other ulterior motives, then we're actually practicing pure devotional service. Now, I may still have material desires, but so in that sense, I'm not pure. But still, what I'm practicing is pure devotional service. Somebody else may be performing devotional service to Krishna, but may definitely want something out of it. So that person isn't on the path of pure devotional service, even though they're worshiping Krishna. So that's one sense of being on the path of practicing pure devotional service. But then when devotional service has actually attained a pure state, then one never departs from it. It's not that you have to be in a pure state never to depart. At a certain level in pure devotional service, there may still be impurities, but still it's very rare that somebody falls away. This is called nishta. That's what's meant by steady. There's still purification to go, because nishta is not the final stage. So there's still some anarthas. But once one comes to nishta, although it's possible that one can fall away, it's very rare. Okay? Anything else? Yeah, thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.